Congratulations, you're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast. Okay, folks, we got an interview for you today after 3 years of our pandemic. Oh, I forgot to say this is Kate Rhodes and you're going to hear Maysoon Wazwaz in a sec. Point is, we're doing an interview. Get ready. I personally consider it a great one, but I'm biased, so you can give your own opinions. We want to give a huge thank you to our sustaining donors, Jim Prosser and Anonymous, that helped Maysoon get over to the East Bay, which she absolutely hates doing. And if you want to give a donation to the show, you can go to congratulationspinetree.com. Did I thank our sustaining donors? Yes. And if you want to just send us any kind of feedback, and we'll have show announcements. People have emailed us some things. We're going to get to those next week. Thank you. Always send us stuff. Or give us a call, 419-351-6606. You can tweet us at Pine Tree Podcast, or you can email us congratulationspinetree@gmail.com. We're here in beautiful Oakland, California, talking to Gabe Garza, the co-director slash curator slash everything, along with your partner in love and in art, Thea Walsh. So you're over there, just to be clear, you're an artist also in your own right. We'll let you talk eventually. Maybe. Okay.
This is where Kate goes on a monologue for about an hour.
But you're also you're doing in concert over there. The gallery. Okay, good. Really good. We introduced you so good.
I thought that was quite succinct. Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Maysoon, for having me.
And just to set the stage a little more for the listeners, I'm completely out of control.
This is an unhinged edition.
Yes. Oh, well, all of the editions are unhinged, to be quite honest.
I really shouldn't touch the microphone. No one touched the microphone.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. You're fine.
This is the thing Kate does all of this.
Okay, but point
Don't
is...
Don't make Gabe nervous.
I just want to ask, because of the mental weirdness that I'm bringing to the table, if you're comfortable saying, do you deal with any kinds of mental weirdness, and how have you found navigating that?
Yes, I definitely find myself quite nervous most of the time in my life. And, I think actually living in the Bay has been a great place, great space to ease my mind, which is what I experienced when I lived here a few years ago, kind of like set the precedent for wanting to move back here, because I went to LA between 2019 and 2021. I feel like LA is where I'm from, so that's where all my issues stem. And
get away from that.
Yeah, had to move away from that for a little bit. I feel a lot of clarity when I'm here, living here, working here, making art.
So you found that actually moving geographically was effective for mental weirdness. So I'd like all the listeners to take note of that.
Yes, to the Bay, not. I mean, you can move somewhere else and have this experience too, but I feel like there's a strong psychic sort of negativity that looms over Los Angeles that's really hard to live under. But, that's just my take.
I love that. Yeah, go ahead, Maysoon.
I also love Los Angeles.
I love that you're saying these things, because we've lost so many people to LA.
Right. Right.
We used to do a Bay versus LA segment on the podcast where one of us would do the positive of LA or whatever negative here.
Right.
Yeah.
But I feel like you just did that for us, which is great.
Oh, cool.
Honestly, I really, I can't thank you enough for that. And
you're welcome.
Bless you.
Thinking about the Bay Area and what you think is sort of what has helped calm or relieve stress or anxiety here versus LA. Like, what do you think are some defining differences I don't know.
Well, I guess something that I had felt originally in my time here a few years ago was that there was just a stronger and more welcoming art community, which is something that I always was looking for in Los Angeles and sort of had from going to art school there. But when I came here, I just felt like it was just easier to share my work and easier to listen to other people, and like actual productive things came from those conversations, and it didn't feel like networky, it didn't feel like social climby, just was sort of how it was. And I think that's generally because there's maybe less pressure, which some people like to have to keep their practices moving in a certain way. So I really felt attuned to that and felt like I wanted to bring that more into my life, but also to create projects and have my practice be surrounded by that energy. Also the proximity to nature, like, is so spectacular. It's unbelievable, you know, just 5 minutes in any direction from our place in Oakland. Just it's you can get everything, anything you want to see, the most beautiful, gorgeous views and nature, exercise, whatever, you know. Yeah. Which you can get in LA too, but it's more
you have to sit in like an hour of traffic.
Yes.
First.
You have to go.
It's
you either
dustier.
It's definitely drier, dustier, and yeah, you have to go much further to find it. Seclusion, you know, is hard to find there.
Yeah.
Which can be strange here too, when you sort of feel like nobody's around, or even, which happens, I think, a lot in the city, more so.
Have you seen any wildflowers in the Bay Area recently? Oh. Because I really, my birthday is on Tuesday, and I want to get the hell out and go like roll around in the grassy wildflower zone.
I've just been.
Will you give me? Oh yeah, go ahead.
Seeing them like everywhere, not, you know, like I haven't seen just, the
like,
massive,
in like
but,
the medians even, like just
yeah,
in the
totally.
City, right?
You just, yeah, just go drive around for your birthday. Just hit the streets.
LA style.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
What part of LA did you grow up in?
In Silver Lake. And that's where my parents still live. And I was living there during the beginning of pandemic and running a project from my house too, showing other people's art. It was called Punto was Layers me? Inc. Yeah. Yes. it was a year-long project that I did. And it was really influenced by my time growing up there, and like collaborated a lot with my neighbors and... Mm-hmm. You know, invited people into my family's yard, which was a really special experience. You know, a lot of the times when I say, like, I'm from Silver Lake, people say, you must have seen so much change.
I was just going to do that. Oh, gosh, should
I
not?
Have let you.
You didn't have to. You saved me soon on that one.
Well, it's true, but it's just.
Silver Lake, I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, that seems like a kind of a nightmare place to me now. Mm-hmm, but, mm-hmm. I mean. Anyway,
yeah, sorry. No, I know what you mean. And I think it's just sort of been, it's been the same for me my whole life. Like, it's just been constantly changing and constantly growing in terms of, like, businesses and, you know, like, where my parents live. It's all residential. It's, like, on the north side of the lake. And it's not, like, it is a beautiful place. And, you know, young, cool people move there. But... it's mostly families. Like, everyone on our block has lived there forever. Like, my neighbor on my left has been living there for like 40 years. You know, it's just like a kind of normal neighborhood too. You know,
were your parents still there while you were doing this curatorial project?
Yes, yeah, they were.
Are
and they were involved
artists?
Too. Well,
I love that.
Yeah, they are artists. My mom is a producer of theater, Original Theater Works. Shout out About Productions, aboutpd.org. my dad is the chair of the arts journalism program at USC.
Holy shit.
Which is a recent appointment.
This is why.
Yeah, Oscar Garza and Teresa Chavez, my mom. And they both have made art, visual art, at different points in their lives. My mom went to CalArts in the 80s and then taught there for many years. But I did do a show of their work that they made before they knew each other from the late 80s. That was really, really special. just like stuff that I know.
I love that. Yeah.
I know, it actually makes me kind of emotional thinking about it too.
Yeah. Thank good. You. We have our tissue.
The
box.
Tissues were prepped.
That's really sweet.
it was a really rad show. Like, and yeah, it was work that I had uncovered while we were kind of cleaning the house during COVID time, you know, doing that kind of, you know, throwing stuff away and finding things. And yeah, that was a really good show. It was our first show in 2021. And then they both contributed also to the final group show that I had, which was a 40 person group show.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. As an artist, because I think of you as number one, an artist.
Thank you.
Number two, a total mint. And number three, a curator.
Oh.
And I just wonder sometimes, like, why curate? Because as an artist, I'm like, I understand the impulse to make art.
Right.
But then putting a show together, I'm kind of a little more, like, estranged from that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what I was getting at before reaching towards was just that I have so many friends and people in community who make art and don't have the opportunity to show it. And I just felt like when I started the project at my house, I just felt like I had this giant space to work with and wanted to invite people, especially during this time that was so difficult for making artwork for many. And also it seemed like a moment where there was going to be a huge change in how artwork was going to get shown. And that did happen for a while, where like people weren't really going into galleries, you know, that I just had the time and space, really, to, you know,
he had the real time and space.
You know, give people that space and opportunity to show work and to have them meet other artists and like create new relationship in art community. And so that's been my drive, sort of just like, yeah, friends and family. That's my, what I like to see in art space. But, you know, coming now into this project in concert that I'm running with Theodora Walsh, my wife, we sort of have like a different scale because we have an interior sort of more traditional art space. So it feels like we have this opportunity to reach out to people or collaborate with people who we don't really know, which hasn't totally happened yet, like, but we're sort of working on some things in that sense, more traditional curation style. But I'm always attuned to just who I know, who's, you know, around me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you want to talk about Ocean's show, the first show you
all
did?
Yeah, totally. Well, I guess with these shows that we're doing right now, like also because my relationship to a lot of artists in the Bay is newer, at least in the span of my whole life, because I showed some people in my other projects that I have known since I was a child, you know, like my parents. well, when I moved back to the Bay in fall 2021, I started to work again at NIAID Art Center in Richmond, which I had a short stint at a few years ago. And Ocean Escalante and I started working right at the same time, doing the same job, facilitating in the painting and drawing area. And we just, she's from SoCal and from San Diego. And like, we just had a lot of overlap in our art life trajectory. Now we like co-run the field trip program, which is really fun. And we got a studio together. And right around that time, and it was both of our first studios, we never had a working space like that. So when that happened, I started to see that she was developing something that looked like a body of work that should be presented together in a space. And Thea was also getting to know her just from us all hanging out more. And so that just became the first show, which I found combined this sort of, you know, feelings that I like to have for other projects I'd done in the past, or it felt like past projects, because I was like, oh yeah, it's just like my friend, but also like more serious, like Ocean's first solo show, and it's in our first gallery show, yeah, that's how that came together.
Can you talk about how you guys came, or just I guess how you came about to getting the space or having that space?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Wasn't Thea doing some kind of thing with Claudia LaRocco on Backroom, the blog with small press traffic?
That's right. So Thea got asked to do a piece for the Backroom about the closure of Cushion Works because Jordan was going to sort of dissolve the project here. And through that conversation and interviewing that was happening over a few months, he decided to ask Thea if she and I wanted to sort of take over the space and manage his shows and also do our own project. Mm-hmm. Previously, Cushion Works just used this one room, the larger room. And then during COVID, they started to use the smaller room that's right next door, or, you know, in the hallway. And so we're sharing both. So we go back and forth every show now. And yeah, Jordan had come and seen an exhibition that we had done at our house. We had planned a series or executed a series of shows called That's Amore that we did in artists' homes, showing their art that's sort of like from their private collection, basically. Oh. And reformatting a space in their place to be sort of exhibition ready. So we worked with our neighbor that we live in the same building of, neighbors, Paige Valentine and Lucas Terranova, who knew Jordan from SFAI. They were both students of Lindsay White, Jordan's partner. And so he came and saw that. And I think that was the jumping off point of him sort of seeing how we were working and planning exhibitions. And yeah, that was that. We established this setup, which is really awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I read Thea's, that essay was beautiful and made me cry, most definitely. Oh, as someone who's lived in the Bay Area for a very long time.
Yeah.
But it was such great news, you know, hearing Cushion Works Jordan Lindsay were leaving. Oh my God, what's happening with the space? But to hear another, you know, gallery or, yeah, project spaces opening was really exciting, I thought.
Yeah.
It's a miracle. It's a miracle.
Totally. Yeah. It felt miraculous. And sort of, I think everyone was worried that it was, you know, Cushion Works was becoming a part of this sort of deflation of art space in the Bay, which, you know, I, from coming from sort of outside in a way, like I still was feeling this resurgence of like artistic energy just from being here for myself.
Cool.
And obviously places are still closing and some are moving and changing, but it just seems like it's part of the natural cycle of like the art environment here. You know, it's not, doesn't feel so surprising to me, but I also haven't been here for so long, you know. Mm-hmm. But it just, it feels like there's still a lot going on, and I'm really happy that we can be a part of that sustaining.
Did you have a question?
No, go ahead.
I wanted to ask you about,
yeah,
I like the names of your galleries.
Oh, cool.
And they're just more creative than I think a lot of them tend to be, you know. That's usually like an address or the name of, you know, like,
sure,
you know. And I was like, oh, that's, I think it's refreshing. And I love it, and there's some humor to them a little
bit.
So
totally,
I wanted to see if you could just talk about some of that.
Definitely. Well, the first project I mentioned, Punto Layers Inc., is an anagram of Upton Sinclair. It was a secret that was the name, you know, or the background for the name. And I chose that because I was doing research on this book that Upton Sinclair wrote with his wife, Mary Sinclair. And the book is called Mental Radio, and it's about her sort of telepathic abilities. It's a work of like pseudoscience, and it's also an art project. They ran their experiments by having Mary create drawings that she was that were the result of her, you know, sort of telecommunicating with people from, you know, sometimes it was someone in the other room, but they also conducted it with people who were like in other countries. And so the book sort of documents their findings, and there's all these really great sort of weird drawings that are collected in the book. So I was interested in this collaborative project and, you know, having a writer and an artist create this document and, like, yeah, working with tons and tons of people. Albert Einstein wrote the intro. So that jumped off, or that set the tone for Punto Layers Inc. in terms of it being two-person shows, where I was thinking about this cross sort of, like, you know, cross psychic boundary that people can share, and like maybe I was seeing similarities in people's work or thinking around their practices and just gathering them in my yard. The first five shows we did were people who hadn't ever shown work together, and then the second set of five shows were all people who had known each other for like a really long time, like my parents, but had never shown work together. Mostly romantic, but some like friend relationships too. And also like Punto's point in Spanish. And so it's supposed to be like point making in a layer incorporated. Yeah. yeah. And then That's Amor, which Thea and I produced together, came from a phrase. The full phrase is, "That's a more better way of doing things." Okay. So it was just, yeah, sort of cutting that off, but also obviously That's Amore, like, but the full phrase came from this idea of explaining how to work on a project when you are not totally cohesive in speaking. Like you would say, "That's a more better way." And then In Concert is, it was derived from the moment that Jordan sort of formally asked us to do the project. The day that he asked us, I was looking at this live album by this big band musician, and it just said "Live in Concert" on it. And I felt super attracted to the name and just the spirit of concert, in terms of agreement, accordance, and harmony, which is like the proper definition, but also musical relationship and, you know, just working together and how we are in concert with Jordan, and, you know, and with the Cushion Works space. I mean, I wanted to say this earlier, that really the one of the main people who sort of keeps Cushion Works, the gallery, and In Concert going, and wanted to continue to have a gallery in the space is Susan, who runs Cushion Works, the business. Like, she's been so supportive and continues to just really enliven our project through her just dedication to supporting artists.
For listeners that may not be familiar, there is an actual cushion manufacturing company on the bottom floor beneath, well, the first floor.
And third floor.
There you go. Above and below the Cushion Works Gallery.
Yes.
And they are avid enthusiasts of Borzois.
What?
Excuse me?
That dog.
Oh, the dog.
What are the
that artist?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, Boisers.
Boisers?
Is that what they're called?
People, this is Kate from the future letting you know that the dogs that the Cushion Works people are into are actually Salukis. Gabe informed me after the interview was over. Okay, back to it. They're kind of like a really furry greyhound.
Yes, exactly.
Oh.
They got a long face on them.
Yes, that's
They're
right.
They're so cute.
They're so cute. They have three of them. They're show dogs. And part of the initial, like, knowing that we were going to be a right fit for this space was that when we went with Jordan to have our meeting with Susan, we had just been the weekend before in Santa Rosa to just hang out, but we'd gotten word from our friend and artist Daisy Chef that there was a dog show that was happening.
Yeah.
And we thought Daisy paints like dogs in her work a lot, so we thought she was talking about a group art show or something, and she was like, no, there's a dog, like, you know, Yukonuba dog thing happening.
Like a competitive dog show.
Yes, exactly.
Where they cup their balls. They do, Maysoon. They
it's
have to
true.
Be intact.
I know, it's weird.
They it's do weird. That. It's fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah, not all the dogs seem happy in their position at the dog show.
I was
but,
just wondering. Where's the consent on that one?
Totally.
Everything, I mean, everything for the dogs is non-consensual.
Yeah.
True. I think about that a lot when I see almost every dog. You know, only the ones that are off-leash are really free.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when we went to go
but
meet
their
with...
their DNA is part of our manipulation.
Because
we breed them. They're not meant to
right,
be like
right.
this.
Right, right. They've been programmed now to live this way. Well, one day they'll take it all back.
Really good.
Well, yeah, so when we had our meeting with Susan and Jordan, we realized that she had also been at the dog show doing, we didn't see her, but she was there, like, racing her dogs, and so she immediately just was, like, so happy to know that we were, like, you know, looking at the same things in the real world, you know. She's a real one, yeah. Highly recommend communicating with Susan next time you're at Cushion Works.
Are her dogs, are those dogs friendly, or are...
Sort of, not like as
not like a Labrador
not like,
or something.
Yeah, exactly. They're not super, I would say, approachable, and they're so beautiful. You kind of don't need like want to interact.
You just
want to
look at them.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and they kind of keep to themselves. They're very quiet too. You know,
they have a very like proper demeanor.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Very regal.
I wanted to just rewind a little bit and ask if you believe in psychic power.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Please say more.
Well, I mean, especially when I was doing this research for the project and reading the book, I felt like I could remember moments in my life where I'd had experiences where I felt, you know, like moments or communications were happening because of just thinking power. I guess I've like brought friends and like relationship into my life that is built on that sort of thinking, or like similarities and interests, you know, like more general sort of overlaps in just what people are thinking about, you know. But I have had experiences, and with Thea a lot too, actually, like more than anyone I've ever known in my life. We're often like communicating and seeing things on a level that feels telecommunicative, I would say, which is good for working together.
Yeah, yeah.
But we also like sometimes always know what we're, you know, thinking about. Obviously, it's from just learned and, you know, just from time spent together. But
you don't think it's because of being connected on the astral plane?
I think that we are also like, yeah, sort of. Yeah, wed in that space too. Yeah, kind of like sitting on the astral couch together, you know.
Oh.
Do you believe in like another plane of existence, and then also what happens when we die?
I don't. I feel pretty uncertain right now what happens when we die. But I do think that there are definitely other planes. I'm very much into this idea of people like who have passed or like who haven't existed yet, or, you know, just kind of being in the space between our world, kind of, you know, they're accessible in some ways. Yeah. I don't really practice like communicating with people in that way, but I often feel like, not often, but I have experiences where I feel like someone is, you know, showing me something or guiding me, or like people in my family, or like, I guess even people that are alive too, right? Like that can like give you things from afar, from other places, because you're kind of like putting things out into that place and then it's coming back down into your space.
How do I do that?
Give us advice.
I think drinking a lot of water is good.
Ooh.
Yeah. Which, thank you so much for bringing the bubbly out. If the carbonation is probably really good for that, like, you know, really popping your mind open. I don't know. I actually find that running, which is something I've done for a long time, brings me into this place more clearly, where I'm kind of like processing and understanding like why things are happening or where things are coming from, or I can locate or make sense of, you know, just things that are happening, good or bad, you know. So yeah, just like a little exercise in water.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty easy. Yeah.
Are you going to start running and drinking water now?
I drink a lot of water because I have a compulsion to be constantly chewing on ice. But,
oh, yeah. That is bad for your teeth. There's sure one enough. Thing my dentist has told me in my life that I actually believe. It's that chewing ice is bad for your teeth.
Were you doing it and they were trying to stop
you? Yes, they knew I was doing it. They were like, we can see that you have been doing this for a really long time. And it did actually kind of pretty much almost completely stop me from doing it. Because it seems like it's actually pretty bad.
How did you stop?
I just stopped.
You were scared straight?
Well, I did something that was also like following in the footsteps of my mom's drink ordering lineage, which is to not order ice in a drink. Or like if you get water at the table, like no ice.
Yeah.
We don't keep ice in our home also. Well, we have these spherical ones.
Okay, I'm like, what about cocktails or something
we
like that?
Yes, we have, for shaming. Cocktails, we have these like spherical giant ice that you
that
cannot
you
put in
you
your mouth.
You choke to death.
Please do not.
Okay, but did everyone in your family have a chewing ice compulsion?
No, but my grandfather on my dad's side, my dad's dad ran an ice house in Texas, which is like sort of a place where you could actually go buy ice and, you know, chip away at the pick and take some home. But it was also a bar and sort of concert hall. Yeah. In San Antonio, Texas.
Ice is in your blood.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was called Willie's.
Wow.
Willie's Ice House.
Yep.
I feel like you need to bring that back, too.
I've thought about it. In one of my like fantasies of moving to San Antonio, it's like to sort of re-envision a project like that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these old ice houses have been converted into more contemporary bars, you know. But yeah, they're really cool spaces. Really like sort of they're kind of shabby, but and bare bones. But they were really amazing like meeting spaces for everybody in the neighborhoods, like after work, like, you know, just like dancing, singing. A lot of conjunto music was performed at these places.
Do you want to say a little bit about what you've been working on lately in your own individual art practice? I feel like so much of your work was focused on cars. And so I'm wondering if cars. Being out of LA has changed that a little.
Well, yes. When I lived here a few years ago, I became incredibly inspired by bumper stickers, which was something I had been working on in the past. I made my first bumper sticker in high school, and I made my second bumper sticker in college. And then I continued to...
Wait, were these like, you got a like a sticker sheet and like drew on it with like Sharpie or painting? Or
no.
What does that mean?
Well, all of the bumper sticker pieces that I've made were all produced through a company called BuildDesign.com, which is based in Austin, Texas. And I had learned about them in high school, produced this sticker that said, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on it. It said, you can't go anywhere anymore without anyone being there. And it was like, there was a stock image of the desert in the background, just with the text playing. I only made two. One was on my car, and then the other one I gave to my friend Dorothy Hoover, who I had sort of produced the piece for, which is a way I had been I continued to make some of the stickers that a lot of them were sort of one-offs where there was one archival, one for the car, or like one for me, one for somebody else. But yeah, when I was living in Berkeley in 2018, 2019, I just became incredibly into making and designing and having ideas for stickers. And I was seeing a lot more that were adorned in a way that was very full. You know, it's I mean, you see it everywhere, but I felt like in Berkeley, I saw it more than ever in my life. And I just really loved that space as like a display for sculpture. And I was thinking of all of these works, even though they're flat, as sculptural. And like, you know, reading the text from afar through the car or like from the street sort of creates this access to material that is a little different from when you're inside of a gallery or like reading a book, like just kind of open air or like open space between yourself and the work, which I found like really valuable in thinking of alternative ways of processing art. I've made a few works with cars, like my thesis work for UCLA undergrad art. I had all the combustible parts of my car removed so I could put the car inside of the gallery in like fire marshal approval version, because there had to be nothing that could catch or like start a fire, basically.
So what, I mean, that sounds like almost everything.
It was everything. Like,
okay, they, and like, I don't even, like, no, seats are, it, could...
Right. Well, basically anything.
Wait, the seats? You had to take the seats?
No. I just feel like there's... No, I know what you mean. The
no,
definition
gasoline.
Of...
gasoline.
Okay.
Exactly.
Oil.
Anything where oil or gas was running through the car.
So any moving part. Any
moving
kind of
part
gear or
and
anything.
Like...
Hoses.
Yes, the hoses and like...
I'm basically an automotive engineer.
I mean, you're spot on with this detail.
So
it's like...
primarily like the frame...
Yes, basically everything underneath maybe? And in front
it's
of under the hood.
But the shit that runs oil
goes
or
inside
gas through it.
The interior of the car remained
it
intact.
It looked intact. Like yes. When you see it, it looks normal unless you like open the hood. Right.
Yeah. One of the other things that made it seem like unusual was that because so much weight had been removed from the front of the car, it was lifted, kind of like lowrider style, which I thought was really nice, but. Yeah, so I'd use my car for that piece. I just wanted to create something that...
Wait, you used your own car for that?
Yes. It was a car. It was my mom's car that she had given to me. it was like on its way out anyway. Okay. So it was kind of time for it to be used for a sculpture to be commemorated. And then after that, I got a truck that I named Texida Toyota, which lives in Silver Lake, which was sort of like an art car. There's been a performance that I've developed with it that I haven't actually executed, but that became my vehicle. And then I bought, actually the first time I did a curatorial project in Silver Lake was at my across the street neighbor's house. He was moving and selling his house and it was going to be demolished. And he asked me if I wanted to curate a group show in the house as a last hurrah. So we kind of co-curated that. Basically, he created an installation inside of his home. And then I curated my friend's work all outside and in the garage. That was called Reservoir Coyote. It's like a two-day thing. But he sold me his Toyota 1999 Toyota Camry for $200.
Hell yeah.
Great deal.
Amazing.
after the show, because he was moving to London. And so that's been my car up until last week when it died on me. It just passed.
R.I.P. will play the song.
I'm really hoping I can get it back into shape. I know, yeah. I know. It happened with the truck and with this car. I basically like got them from their first owners and the Volvo too, my mom's car, the the first art car, and I basically ran them all into the ground. We drove, Thea and I drove it to LA a couple weeks ago, and that was sort of, I shouldn't have done that.
The final,
yeah,
final drive.
Yeah. But that car is what I call the bumper car, which has all of my first set of bumper stickers on it that I produced in 2018-19. So yeah, I've sort of been, I sort of moved away from using build design and also making stickers. I'm developing some new ways of making more like analog sticker and analog kind of like flat signage work. Just because, yeah, build design was very giving, but it was all, you know, print on demand. And so it has a very particular aesthetic. And I really loved using it for a long time, just like sort of plugging my ideas into this rudimentary design program that's on their website and just sort of having that as the style of the work. But yeah, I'm very interested in the car and transportation and you know, I don't know. Just this week, I'm like trying to figure out new ways of getting around, like borrowing my wife's car.
That's really good.
Which does have some of my art stickers on it too. Which I also saw pinned up on the wall or on the bulletin board out on the front. Yeah. Well, help then. Trace maps. Yeah.
Okay. So also, okay. Well, okay, you went to UCLA, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Go Bruins.
So, hell yeah! Woo! Okay. So I do have to ask, and feel free not to answer, but do you want to say anything about Andrea Frazier?
Well, I honestly can't say much because I did not take a class with her. I actually went into... I tried to take an advanced new genres class with her when I was a sophomore, and she didn't let me into the class, but I did get to sit in the first... It was because I wasn't, like, old enough, basically. Oh. Everyone else who was in the class was, like, a junior or senior, and they had precedent for this class that was already impacted. And But I remember that first day, she had us perform, like, a group... She split us up into multiple small groups, and we each had to create an installation in the room using the tables and chairs. And we sort of set a scene of, like, my group, like, stacked the tables on top of each other and, like, the chairs on top of the tables, and we all just kind of, like, sat on them and created a sculpture, I guess. I don't remember really what the exercise was for. I think it was just to sort of, I don't know. I guess it was to, like, weed out me, and then I don't remember, like, contributing very much to the project, and sort of felt like wasn't what I wanted to be doing, and then I wasn't in the class. But a lot of my friends who studied with her really, really liked her teaching a lot and continued to work with her. And I think currently, this might have just changed, but she was the chair of the department for the last few years, and she took Mary Kelly's position as the head of the interdisciplinary program, because Mary Kelly left and actually now teaches at USC. Yeah, it was a...
Whoa, why didn't she retire?
I don't know. It was a retirement. Yeah.
Doing not retiring.
Yeah. I think that was what everybody thought was happening, but then she got offered this, like, really esteemed chair in the USC art department. Wow. So, she was amazing to work with, Mary. I took this great sort of psychoanalytical critique class where people were installing work every week based on a medium. So it started with, like, drawing and then painting, sculpture, performance, and then, like, installation. Or maybe it was installation then performance. But the crit started with the group walking into the room and just kind of talking about what the room felt like. And you talk about the walls and the lights and the floor, and you wouldn't actually get to the point of the work until much later on. Like, we take a break before we even got to talking about the artwork. And by the end of it, there would be a moment where, you know, we'd stop. She would stop the group from talking and then say what she thought the work was about based on what everybody had said. And, you know, she'd say, like, so this is about your relationship with your father. And then and the artist would be like, oh my God, like, yes. And then that would be it. That'd be the end of the class. So it was just through this very, like,
wow.
Yeah, analytical, like, but very pragmatic, like, relationship to critique. And it always ended up sort of getting to the, you know, point of the work,
the core, yeah.
The core of the work. It was really amazing.
But would the artist would never be like reject whatever the final say
no.
was. They would be like, you fucking got it.
Because she was so on point.
Yeah, yeah,
wow,
yeah.
That's amazing.
But it was kind of like through kind of like a divining in the group that she was being like the lightning rod.
Exactly.
Taking on the group.
It was kind of like she knew the whole time. And sometimes when people would say like sort of the not the wrong thing, but we're going in a direction that was too sort of like referential to something else or like reading too quickly into the work, she would stop them and say like, nope, like take a step back. And then eventually once we were getting closer and closer, she would say, no, no, closer, come closer. And like point at like one little tiny part of the work or like, you know, one side of the piece and be like, look here, like this is where the information is located. And it,
I love
yeah,
her.
Yeah.
Oh my
she's,
God.
She totally, I can't imagine that she doesn't believe in telepathy and like psychic
the
powers.
World.
I mean, a lot of her like postpartum work that she did that was working with her child was all about that relationship of, you know, sort of interpreting and like working with somebody whose like cognition is not totally verbal. I mean, it moved into that space because the work was continued to be made as this her son became an adult. But yeah, she's really rad.
Okay, so we always like to ask for our final question.
This is a really quick one.
Yeah,
what is your astrological sign?
Oh, great one. We should all.
I am a Cancer.
Thank you.
July 14th.
Oh,
mm-hmm. Psychic.
Yes.
Water signs are very psychic.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. Do you think that's because like the water is the body that is like surrounding everything? Like everybody sort of like lives inside of the water space.
Yeah, and we're full of water.
We're water.
Our brains
and we're
have
water.
A shit ton
right.
of water. Also, it's all fake.
Right.
So
So
you can kind of say whatever you want.
Yeah. Say whatever you want.
But it's true, though, because Pisces...
Well, that's why drinking more water can make you better at telepathy.
There
and
you motherfucking have it. Okay. So we always like to ask for our final question, is there anything else you would like listeners to know?
I definitely want to plug coming to In Concert. Mm-hmm. We're open Thursdays and Saturdays, 2 to 5. Thea's usually there on Thursdays. I'm usually there on Saturdays. You can make an appointment too. Very, very proud of our current show, Dorian Reed, backed with Reed's Records. And that's open until May 27th. But yeah, I guess something else I could say is that, I've been in my explanation of my artwork that I'm working on now, I feel like I'm in this period in my art career I recently was in this period where I felt like I had to reassess how I was working. And a lot of people around me my age have been, I think, in this position too right now, like sort of coming out of COVID, like figuring out how to, and this isn't just an age, you know, like this is everybody's having some of these feelings, right? Like how to reevaluate working on things. And I really think that looking back at like older work and even things like if you can find artwork you made as a child, if that exists, like I think that just sort of, it's not a reversion, it's just sort of like a, you know, looking back and taking information from that place, I think can be really valuable because it's just from before you had all of these like worries and issues. Like, again, like when you're asking me how I'm sort of finding comfort in my like mental unwellness, like definitely thinking about when I was like looking at this work from when I was a kid, it feels like it's just full of it's full of inspiration for me. So go find your old notebooks and recreate that. The work and
really
then
good.
Move forward from there. Yeah.
We love some concrete advice on the show. Well, thank you so much for putting up with all of my bullshit today. And
I love talking to y'all.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. I'm so glad to have you as our first interview in 3 years.
I know.
And as always, congratulations.
Wow.
Okay, what'd you think? I thought that was a fantastic interview. Aside from me having to look for cables for 3 hours while Gabe and Maysoon waited, I want to thank them for that. And I want to say we'll be seeing you from the bridge to the other bridge to the island in between. This has been Congratulations, Pine Tree!